Welcome back to the Weekly Manga Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all of your favorite ongoing Japanese manga. This week, we are taking a look at the first two chapters of the new Shonen Jump piano drama, Star of Beethoven. And renowned artist Boichi is back after his time on Dr. Stone to bring us a classic shonen adventure in the technological Old West in The Marshall King. We're also going to finish up this week by catching up on a crazy spoiler-filled flashback from Ranger Reject. All that manga news and more coming right up. Hello again, my name is Bruce. I'm the proprietor of the White, Gray, Black YouTube channel, and this week I'm joined again by my constant co-host, Gautam.
Hello, hello.
A special shout-out and thanks to our Patreon subscribers, Yaji Black. If you want to have your name read at the top of the episode, see some bonus content, discussions, and more, check out patreon.com/WGBmanga. It only starts at $3. All right, Gautam, let's hop right into Star of Bethlehem. I keep on wanting to say Star of Bethlehem, because that's just like a phrase that I have repeated being raised a Christian in America 1,000 times. It's Star of Beethoven. Star of Beethoven, new weekly Shonen Jump series, two chapters out. I usually ask you to go first, but I'll go first. It's dead in the water.
Okay.
It's absolutely dead in the water. It's fine, but it's dead in the water. Like,
I think so, too, to be honest. Like, I don't love making a cult shot because it could go somewhere. But I don't know. I didn't really find much I liked about it.
Yeah, same. I think the art is messy. The layouts are okay. The big issue I had with chapter one was that the main character had no drive. I did not know what the main character wanted. I did not know what the main character desired, what his path was at all. There's a little bit of that in chapter two, but not really. It tells us the history of the main character. It does not actually tell us what he wants. Like, it kind of maybe alludes to it, but and not like giving your main character some kind of desire is so basic and essential to the start of a story that people, I think, forget about it. And this Yasuo in this story does not have a drive at all from what we can see. I think Beethoven's great.
yeah, it's kind of funny you mentioned. I think we're very aligned on this because I also thought, like, I didn't even know, like, the main character is a piece of cardboard in my eyes. He was just kind of there. I guess this is, like, we're going to go through the chapter here in a sec, but you're right. Beethoven is the standout. I kind of, like, as I was reading the first few chapters, I was, like, wishing that the main character wasn't even there, and it was just Beethoven being a crazy old kook
for sure. It's more like a, oh gosh, what was there was an anime that came out a while ago that was some ancient Chinese general gets reborn and helps a pop star girl. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it Nobunaga? But
no, it's not Nobunaga.
No, I don't remember this.
It had a really catchy OP that, hold on. Chinese general pop star.
Oh, Chinese general.
Yeah, I think he was Chinese. Your boy Kong Ming. That's what it's called in English.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard about this. All my friends watched it, and it has a really catchy OP if you go listen to it. But that's more fun because that was fun. But the main characters.
Yeah, that sounds silly, right? Because it's a Chinese general engaging with pop star culture.
Right.
Yeah. Like in modern day.
Yeah. So I got curious because we've gone through a couple of series like almost exactly like this, right? Like where it's sort of a character drama with one fantasy element. The directing thing that came out a while ago by the Shokugeki no Soma creators was like this, like this kind of slice of life drama with a slight fantasy element. There's a weird kind of mutant house thing from last year. Jump has tried this style of manga a lot in the recent years. And so I went back and looked because I was curious. I asked myself, when was the last time Weekly Shonen Jump had a series like this, right? A sort of slice of life drama with a single fantasy element or maybe even no fantasy elements that like worked and lasted more than like a year. What do you think the answer is?
Is the Shokugeki no Soma.
Shokugeki,
the movie one. the movie one they made afterwards, Tenmaku Cinema.
Tenmaku Cinema, yeah. That did not last a year. That lasted, well, maybe it lasted exactly 1 year, but that, I mean, my mind, that kind of got a slightly extended life by having senior creators and then got canceled, you know, after the second round instead of the first round. The answer is never. The answer that I found, looking at the past 25 or so years, is that Weekly Shonen Jump has actually never had one of these types of stories be successful. All of the ones that are successful, like Witch Watch, is kind of this, right? It's a slice of life. It has kind of a singular fantasy element in it, but that's also a rom-com. Comedy. That's a rom-com, right?
Yeah. It's almost like an unhinged, like, I think Witch Watch is more an exploration of the medium of comedy, which is why it's good, right?
Well,
a different gag, a different type of joke, a different magic every week, and it keeps it fun and spice.
Like, yeah, well,
varieties of spice. Is what
exactly, yeah. And every time I looked for, hey, is there a sort of slice of life, slight fantasy thing that Weekly Shonen Jump did, every time that it was successful, it's a comedy or a rom-com also. And I just don't, I'll be honest with you. I think
this was intended to be a comedy, though.
I don't know.
Because of how Beethoven was acting.
If this is supposed to be a comedy, it fails on a whole other level for me because it was not funny at all. I mean,
like, I did think Beethoven was a little funny, but I don't know if we're going through the chapter because I have thoughts on why this doesn't work.
We'll go through it pretty quickly. But yeah, I just want to say that, like, I don't think this is what Weekly Shonen Jump readers want. I don't think they want this kind of story. Like, even a good version of this, right? Tenmaku Cinema was a good story, right? Like, it wasn't perfect, but it was good. And that,
you
failed.
Know what?
Like,
because I have something to add to this, but I let's just go through the chapter because
let's do it.
I think we can kind of summarize why it doesn't work in our eyes.
Rough art. This is kind of a flashback of Yasuo's master here from the first thing. This is chapter 2, by the way. Beethoven, I think, is fun in these. Like, I enjoy watching him act on
him. Yeah, after him, Chase. Just to recap chapter 1, basically he meets Beethoven in a convenience store. He's like, let's call the cops. The convenience store lady's like, no, I don't want the heat on me. Just take him to lunch or something. And on their way to lunch, he sees his old bully / rival / love interest, maybe, I don't know, at a mall. And she's like, you have to play the piano in front of everyone right now because you ran away during a
competition.
Because
it's chapter 1 and you must. Yes.
Yeah. It's like 2 years ago, you ran away from a competition and that disappointed me. So you have to do this. And he's like, okay. And then Beethoven is like, dude, just play music. What are you doing? It's like, I lost my hearing and stuff. Your problems are irrelevant. Play music.
Yeah.
And they play music and them actually playing is like completely skipped over. And instead, we just get an audience reaction of how good it was. Now flash over to chapter 2. Here we are.
It's so hard to do music in manga. I don't know why
people keep
trying to do it. Like,
let's come back around to that point because I think there's stuff to talk about there.
Yeah, so you're on chapter 2. Yasuo's running away. Again, I think Beethoven is sort of a fun character in these situations. His lines also are great. I think the translation here and the writing, I assume, is really good. It's like, you do understand that I am the Beethoven. Yes, like, save your lives for some other sucker.
That's why I kind of wish he was the main character.
Yeah, just harassing different people.
Yeah, and here in these next week pages, we learn that he is kind of grappling with the crippling pressure of being a prodigy and being successful and talented at playing the piano and getting like good piano metrics versus playing music that touches people and touches himself.
Yeah.
Well, I could phrase that last
time. Maybe don't phrase it like that, but
yeah.
Yeah, it was weird for me reading this as, like, you know, I'm not a musical prodigy, but like I've been playing music since I was, you know, pretty very young, like 9 or 10. And I really enjoy playing music, and watching this kid go through and like be like, I added a fake class to my schedule so I didn't have to play music and I could trick my dad. I was like, this guy doesn't like playing music. This is like not compelling. Like as a child, he just hates playing piano. Like, he doesn't like playing piano. He's really good at it, but he does not like it. And that's like super sad and disconnecting. It isn't like, oh, I love it, but I had tried too hard and got burnt out. He's just like, he's 6 and he's like, I don't like this. I don't like playing piano. And that's like, okay, why did you keep playing piano?
Like, what the flashback is trying to convey is that he does like playing the piano. He just doesn't like the pressure and expectations. Yeah, yeah. It's like something that's supposed to be a fun time, like, a meaningful activity to him, not something to kind of like put like metrics behind. It's like, I have to be the best at this. I have to beat all my peers kind of.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. Cause he gets, the next thing that kind of happens is he walks by a shop. He hears this guy playing piano and he sort of gets inspired. And this is the guy he calls like his master or whatever. And so now it's like, okay, now he does enjoy playing piano. That's fine. It's a weird, I don't know. Usually you go from, I love playing piano, and then I got disillusioned and something happened and I stopped. And then we're trying to get back to loving playing piano. And this time it's like, I hated it. And then I liked it. And then I hated it again and fell off. And now I have to go back to liking it again. It's like, I don't know. It's messy in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think we see the theme of like failure come up a lot, like pressure, expectations, and failure.
Yeah.
Destroying something you're passionate about come up a lot in manga, and I think it works as a theme, but I didn't think it was very well executed here.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, and that is something I think that is we generalize that about Asian cultures often, right? I mean, I think even in the West, but also like in Japan and other Asian countries especially, there's this an extreme pressure to sort of like succeed without like without giving an inch, right? Like your success in school or in your, you know, your first 18 years of life is like so paramount that parents put a huge pressure on their children. So
it's,
I get that,
the reality. And it, yeah, you know, I mean, it's because I have Asian parents myself, and I know what it's like on my end of things. Yeah, it's very much one of those things where all the parents put a lot of pressure on their kids to be successful because they want their kids to be successful in life. But more importantly, they want to have something to talk to their friends about and brag about. And like, they compete with each other.
Status.
Like, my son's a doctor. My son's a lawyer, kind of a thing. You know?
Yeah. It's a status symbol to have a successful child for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'd like this pressure, I think is like appropriate for that, but it's like you said, it shows up a lot in manga and anime, and it's been done way better than this one. So,
I agree.
I did like, I did particularly like I said, the writing in this has some really good moments in it. Like I like this line here. It's like, the piano may be king of the instruments, but that doesn't make the pianist a king. Like, that's a cool fucking line. Like, I like that.
I actually, yeah. So there's some, I feel like some of the adult characters, like Beethoven had a cool line too.
Yeah.
In the first chapter where it wasn't even like, I guess it was the author explaining Beethoven's mindset when he created his fifth symphony, right? His fate symphony. And Beethoven was describing how it's all about handling like depression, failure, the harsh realities of life, while losing his health and hearing. And I'm like, that's just awesome. That's like, I don't know. There's some good dialogue when it wants to have some.
Which again, I connects back a little bit to what I was saying about how I don't think this is what Shonen Jump readers want, because I think the weakest part of this is the like shonen protagonist. Whereas if this story was about the adults in the room, it like might be really, really good. So,
well, I think we need, like, in order for it to be a weekly Shonen Jump thing, there needs to be a kid involved,
right,
in some capacity.
Sure.
And I wish the kid was more interesting than kind of a blank slate who is kind of just going with the flow, right?
Yeah.
I think this character is not an interesting character to read, but it's like a normal dude you would meet in real life, and that's totally fine. It's just not.
Yeah, he's got his one thing, piano playing.
So he's not an interesting comic character, I guess.
Yeah. So the master here, you know, he says, you know, gives you the classic, music touches people's souls. Listen, just become a good pianist, okay? One who can reach others' loneliness, one who can touch people's souls like no one else. Foreshadowing for touching souls, as Beethoven is a soul. And basically, this is also another thing that I didn't like. It's like, oh, okay. So his master kind of taught him how to love and how to appreciate music and use it for a positive thing. And then he, like, in the span of like two pages, he like walks by the master's place, learns that he's died, the shop is closed up, and then he like plays so hard and gets so obsessive. He says, "Don't disappear on me," where he's like obsessive about not losing his like I don't even know if it's clear if he's obsessive about not losing the like inspiration the master gave him or his like actual enjoyment. See, at no time does the main character ever say, I'm having fun playing piano now, or like, I enjoy playing piano now. It's like he found a purpose to do it, which is positive, but he never is like, I'm having fun and enjoying this. And so he like overworks himself and you know, same place. And I don't know.
That part I actually don't think needs to be stated too much, because I think you can see him enjoying it for like the first time with his master.
Yeah.
But I think this part is like, it represents him losing both his master and his love of the game, so to say, because the music his master taught him is like gone. He's not playing for the people. He's like playing to preserve something,
yeah,
like a memory. But again, I think you're also right in that it's not like the master's just like dead. We didn't, it was like, it went by really fast.
I skipped it because I think it's a single page. Like, I think it's literally the page before this is like, I walked by the place, it was closed, I learned he died of a cancer, and then he like is playing too hard and gets kicked out.
I did like this panel with the trophies. Like, despite him not enjoying himself, the trophies pile up.
Yeah, for sure. There's this is by far not the worst thing we've read recently, like, that Shonen Jump has done. Like, this is a sort of perfectly okay, you know, mediocre thing that's not great, I would say. But yeah, I like the visual storytelling here is good.
It's like a good, this particular page I like, because it's like, he is very successful, but he's not happy at all. Right.
Yeah, for sure. He's stressed.
Those aren't the metrics of his own success. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also, again, I think this is a good line on the right side here, where it says he utterly dominated the piano. Cause if you go back to the piano, may be the king of the instruments, but that doesn't make the pianist a king. This really ties into that thematically, where it's, Yasuo was trying to be not even the king of the piano necessarily, but the tyrant of the piano, which they noticed and, you know, gave him second place, and that's why he fell off. So, I think that's a cool connection. Like I said, there's some good stuff in this.
And I did like Beethoven's line about how music is for everyone. He didn't betray music or anything like that.
Beethoven's lines here on the page on the left, it's like, is the piano a merchant boy? Like, were the piano a merchant, it would curry favor with the rich while turning its back on the poor. Is the piano then a promiscuous wench? If so, she'd sing more sweetly to the beautiful and never let the homely touch her keys. Thus we conclude it is not. The piano is an instrument, and thus, like all instruments, it was born to serve the god we call music. That's good shit, man. Like, that's a good fucking line in a manga. Like, there's good stuff in this.
Dude. Beethoven should kick him off this bridge and take over as
mayor. Yeah, it's like, let me just preach on the corner about music instead of Yasuo, you're done. Again, the whole lines here are awesome. Like one does not acquire status or wealth to play music nor hear it. Merely seek it and it is given. Knock on its door and it shall open. Like, these are good lines and a really good translation too, I gotta say. So
I'd like to say Beethoven in chapter one said, I'm not really so good with words. And then he goes on these like philosophical monologues about what life means and how the piano fits into all of it. And it's like, so that was a fucking lie, Beethoven.
Maybe people in 1827 were just that much better. Like, he's just the worst of them.
They just wax poetic in daily conversation.
Yeah, it's so good. It's like, you claim to have betrayed music, the sheer absurdity. You worry that music will not forgive you. You think yourself so special that music seethes in resentment of you and you alone. Are you truly so singular a man? Like, that's fire. Like, to be honest, like, Beethoven's great in this, and that these are some fire lines. But yeah, and then the end here, we got, it's like Yasuo is doubting, like, is he really Beethoven? Who is he? The way you played with him, like, this could be the beginning of my resurrection.
Oh.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, Bruce. So at the end of this, Yasuo's like, you can stay over at my place for one day, Beethoven, but only one, okay?
Yeah.
Beethoven's like, tight, hell yeah. Would you have, after all of this, after he's like wax poetic and played the piano with you, would you have let him chill at your pad for a day?
Realistically, no. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. If someone comes up to me and it like looks like a homeless man, seems crazy, and then spouts these fire lines like freaking like like the love of God or the light of the stars, music rains down from above. It's like, okay, he's sane and he has sanity somewhere in his body.
That's a crazy person. No, I would just think that's a crazy person. Because if, like, we can only see these as like philosophical lines because we know that's Beethoven.
That's true.
I would think that's like a deranged person just saying stuff. I'd be like, what reaction do I give him so he doesn't stab me?
It's a little crazy, but it'll be, I mean, that's the dysfunctional partnership that we'll get in the manga. So,
I think we said our piece in the main character. He just really doesn't work for us. We do like Beethoven. In regards to like music, right? I don't know if it works in this medium.
It doesn't. I think it's just one of those things that just does not work. Like, yeah,
because it's something that has to be heard and felt. This is like, it might seem contradictory due to how we love Akane, but I think Akane, we can see the actor's reactions and I don't know. I can feel that. I can visualize that better. Whereas I can't hear the sound of music, over a manga. So I think like music anime, I love a lot and shows and movies, but I don't know if I can really get the same feeling from reading someone play the piano.
It's a weird, there's like a weird Venn diagram. There's a name for a Venn diagram where it like excludes certain parts and includes them. But like thing, like music doesn't work very well, in my opinion, in written, like reading media. Like if you're writing a story about a music performer, like a novel, it can't be about the music. It has to be about the person. And it's the same thing here. Right? Yeah. Like the music can be a part of it, but you have to find a way to make it not about the music. You have to, you know, it can't be like, the overture of his 8th symphony sounds so good in the bar of 15. It's like, stop right there. But in the same way, stuff like reading doesn't work in like movies and visual media. Like, have you ever seen a movie or a TV show that just like presented you with like a letter on screen and just sat there for like 2 minutes and let you read it? Like that doesn't work either. So like there's this weird crossover where it's like, but you know, novels and manga is all reading. So it's this weird, and you could just put a note on a page and let them read it, right? Like, so there's this weird thing where like certain media doesn't work in all other kind of crossover media things, where it's like, music in my opinion does not work in written media at all. Like it has to be about the people.
Does, you know, because we can see the competencies on screen. Like we can still visualize that.
Yeah,
like,
facial emotions sports. And dialogue. Yeah. That's Akane is a stage performance, which is works just fine, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Ultimately not my thing. It sounds like it's not your thing either.
I think it's doomed. I think this is not what Weekly Shonen Jump readers want to even try. Like I just don't think this is the kind of thing that that people reading Weekly Shonen Jump want to try. Like they don't want a music human drama with one fantasy element in it. Like these have never worked in Weekly Shonen Jump. If there have been any that worked that I missed, put them in the comments, because I'm happy to be wrong about it, but I can't think of any recently that were successful that were ran in the series for more than about a year, maybe a little bit longer. But
we're all talking about a sci-fi element, but how sure can we be that this guy is actually Beethoven?
Maybe not. I mean, he could be delusional, but
he could just be a guy who's good at the piano.
Who knows?
But I think that's about. I think it was like a. I don't think it was bad. But I don't think it was good either.
I think
it was like a, and I do think it's kind of DOA, but I don't wish that upon anything, to be honest. So
yeah, I think it's DOA just again from the sort of like genre that it's chosen, and like I think you could execute this at such a high level that people would enjoy it, but this is just an okay level. It's not quite good enough. Yeah. So. Cool. But let's get on to another new series with some completely different issues and strengths. This is Trigun Shonen Part 4. This is The Martial King by Boichi. This is also Chapter 2. We had Chapter 1 last week. This is basically Harry Potter Western Gun. If you had told me that Hiromashima wrote this, right, like the king of the generic shonen, I would be like, oh, yeah, he did. It's exactly the same.
It
looks great.
I are we covering the first two chapters?
Yeah, first two chapters. Yeah.
Okay. I went to go see the Reddit for these, right? I didn't see the one for the Beethoven. I don't know what the reception's like, but I did for Martial King. And people really hated the writing, seemingly.
It's, Yeah. I think
I liked it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was dumb fun.
Yeah, it is basically generic shonen bait. Like, it just is, like, this is just is the plot of, is it Blue Exorcist, right? Is the one where it's like, it's a guy and his dad is an important person and he goes to school to control his powers and get, and, you know, like, get something from the academy. Like, yeah, it's also the exact same plot of, oh God, what was the, like, Rock? There was that Mashima thing we reviewed like last year. That was new.
Dead Rock.
Dead Rock. Right. Almost exactly the same plot.
But that
Dead
was
Rock
fun. Also. That was a fun manga.
Yeah, but it was also a straight generic like shonen action battle. Like, is exactly the same as, like, it has the exact same plot as literally 40 or more other manga.
You know, people complain about things being generic too much when I feel like this is a punch thrown straight. Sure. But yeah, it's a fun one. You know, it's like it throws it well.
Yeah. Well, and it helps that the art, that Boichi is just a god at art. Like, he's one of the best working artists today. So it looks great to read. So even if the writing's kind of like, it's like, well, it looks great, I want to turn the page. So
I didn't even think the writing was all that bad, even though it was trope filled.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think it's bad. I think that it is kind of generic and trope filled, but I don't, you're right. I don't think that necessarily means that it's bad. But let's go through the chapter a little bit and we'll get to some stuff.
This school looks cool.
The art is all super great. The setting is awesome. The design, like, the main character design is sick. Like, the guns look cool. He's like covered in weapons. Like, I don't know. It is a very cool, it seethes cool, which is what Boichi mostly does. We'll get to my major complaint here in the middle of the chapter when we get to it. But
let me just give a quick TLDR of chapter one. Basically, there is this guy called M. Godspeed, who is the baddest outlaw, who's been ruling over the Outlands for hundreds of years. And the chapter starts with him doing a train heist. He's that strong. And he says his son is coming to try to kill him. And he hires some guys to deal with that. And his son shows up. Next thing you know, the dad is dead inside of a coffin. The son is dragging. The son's name is Jim Godspeed. And essentially in the first chapter, he just he's dragging a coffin. He looks like completely out of breath and fucked up.
He's like skinny. And
people try to like gank him for the coffin that has his dad's corpse for the bounty. He kills all of them. And then he says, I'm going to go to Marshall Academy and become a marshal. And this is where we are.
It was the wild, like, just to hit on chapter one a little bit, it was the wildest ending to chapter one for me, because I was like, oh, this is cool. This is like violent. It's in a really unique setting. And then he ends it with saying, like, I'm going to go to the least unique setting in shonen history, a school academy. I'm like, God damn it, Boichi.
I know. I kind of hated it. It's like, let's go to cop school and I'll become cop king, you know, kind of a thing.
And learn to wield the powerful cop gun. Like, literally, that's the plot of this series.
I do love the cop gun plot. We'll get to it here in a sec. But,
it's a little wild. He shows up at school and he's kind of like, what warmth with passion. I will say, standout character for me is the small girl.
The
I can't remember
little
her name.
Girl. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's really fun and great.
I love the main character too. I like how
he's fun.
How,
yeah. He's good.
Yeah, I like how goofy he is.
I love Signet Dylan, eighth year, age 42. I
think that maybe is the best joke so far.
I like it. Yeah.
Why?
I like it because it is a specific counter to where in most school things, this guy would be 16. Instead, Boichi is like, he's 42. Like, let's stop.
That's why.
Just stop drawing
like
high schoolers or people in school that look like kids. It's like, no, this is a man. He's 42.
I anticipate like none of these people are kids then, right? They're all like adults.
I would say that there'll be a range, right? Like, I think Jim is probably 16 or 17. I think the other two female leads are probably around that age also, but maybe not. Maybe they're all like 25. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Boichi is a great artist. Like, I don't know. The faces here, like, get back to the desert. That's an order. It's great.
I absolutely love, like, the sparing use of colors, like the purple and the orange.
Yeah,
that,
like,
that
a little,
awesome.
Yeah. It's
like
cool.
Used throughout both chapters.
I think there's a little bit. Yeah, it's like a little bit. There's like a little bit of yellow in the lights and stuff. Yeah, it's really cool. And it's a neat digital only thing that I've seen in a couple of other series in the past, but it's getting used more and more often from what I've seen. So
this little girl,
Agera, yeah,
she's what's the girl with the watermelon head from Dr. Stone?
I did not read much Dr. Stone.
Suika. Suika? Yeah, Suika.
Oh, like Suika is watermelon in Japanese, so yeah.
Oh, is it really? Okay, yeah.
Did you ever play Suika game that came out? Like,
oh, I guess.
Two or three years ago? Yeah, yeah, it's just watermelon game, I believe, so.
Okay, yeah, yeah. She looks just like a character from Dr. Stone.
Okay, well, we'll get to that, too, because it happens again in, like, three pages. Okay, it happens again right now, actually. So we meet our sort of hot female lead protagonist, which Oichi could not stop him with a jail and threat of death to draw some hot girl in his thing.
No marshal in town can stop him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because like reading up to this, it's like, wow, everyone kind of looks really unique. I think their faces are great. I think Agera is cool and unique looking. And you get here, and this might be the funniest page turn I've ever clicked because, oh my God, it's exactly the same character Boichi has drawn 1,700 times. I hate her face. It's so bad. It's the most, bad.
Everybody hates his women.
I hate his girl face, man. It's so bad.
I think it's fine. But I do get what they mean. Like, the eyes are very far apart. But you know what? It's like, I don't really notice that too much because, like, all anime eyes are unrealistic.
I guess. I will say that she looks her worst in this spread because, like, she looks better and, like, this looks more normal in all the other ones. And, like, the more he draws her, it kind of, she seems a little bit more unique. But, he like, this is literally the face. Like, who's the first girl from Dr. Stone? The, like, that
gets, Kohaku.
And, like, literally it's her. Like, with a slightly different expression.
No, you're right.
Like, it's
you're exactly the
same face. So
it's, Boichi definitely has the Oda problem of making most of his women look very similar.
Yeah. Like, I would, like, cause he did the Nami. I'm trying to think. Cause he did the Nami fight thing. Like, I'm absolutely sure there's a picture of either Nami or the girl he was fighting in that, like, little short chapter that also looks exactly like this, where it's like,
all of his women look like this.
It's just so funny because I was so, like, trained from the first chapter and a half to be like, wow, really unique characters. Everything looks great. Boichi's an awesome artist. And I click this and I'm like, oh, I forgot. this is what his lead girls look like.
Yeah, he has the same issue Oda does for sure, where all of his women have same face.
Yeah. Cool names in this, though, like Century, like Great Martial Commander Century Black. That's pretty cool. Mira Black is good. Yeah. Again, his facial expressions are still good despite his faces. Like, even in this picture, it's like her lips are bigger, her eyes are smaller. She looks fine. Like, it's just this one is just a bad shot.
So they're totally setting up, like, this girl's father, Century, being like 100 years, right?
Yeah.
And they mention how his dad was like an outlaw for 100 years and notorious. They're setting this up to, like, his dad and her dad were like arch rivals, kind of like Goldie Roger and Garp, right?
Yeah, that would be the generic thing to do. The cool thing to do would be
they were lovers,
or I was gonna say their brother and sister, or stepbrother and sister, right? Like, his dad was at some point Century Black and then changed to be Jay Godspeed, or they were the same man. That'd be cool, but I don't think
so. But then he'd have called his sister hot.
Yeah, well, wouldn't be the first time Star Wars did it.
Yeah, so. I know, Star Wars did it, yeah.
Yeah, true. So you can do it here. Basically, they challenge each other to, like, a quick draw shootout. Again, like you mentioned, like, she looks great here, I think, like, way better in this shot from the side. It's just weird that, like, the first time we see her, she looks so generic and bad, and it's like, she looks fine here.
Quick question, Bruce, side topic. At the end of the first chapter, did you realize that the main character, Jim, was hot too? Like, I didn't realize that he was hot until after he, like, put on his cowboy clothes and cleaned up.
I kind of, I don't know. It's hard to.
Because he looked like a skeleton before that.
Yeah,
right?
He was definitely like an emaciated skeleton, but I definitely got the idea. It's like, oh, yeah, he cleaned up good, you know, in that sense, I guess.
But it felt like a mini twist that he was actually attractive, not just a skeleton man.
It's the best twist Boichi's got in a man. You gotta let him but like this spread looks great. So they do. I thought this was cool, actually. They do this quick draw. I forgot that he says, like, you're really hot. They do, like, a quick draw thing. And she's like, oh, he's fast. Could it be? And he, it, like, boom. They
this
both
is
shoot.
Like such, this is such insane, slippery bullshit that I loved it.
This I liked it though, because it was like, that's so crazy and impossible that it's cool, right? Like, which is a good thing. He's like, oh no, I fired my gun backwards. And then the Aguera, who's like, I saw the whole thing. The eyesight of a Aguera Dutch is second to none. It's like, I don't know why they call him Jimmu. Maybe they asked him to change
it. I don't know why. I hope that's not like a your thing where they just change the translation.
Yeah, I don't know. Because
Jim is... Jim is translating for the West, just leave it Jim, right?
Yeah, I'm guessing that I follow the translator, David Evelyn, on Twitter. He's very, very good at translating on Dead End Luck. Exceptionally skilled translator. He translated it as Jim in the first chapter. I'm guessing they saw that and were like, that's not his name. His name's Jimmu. They're like the Japanese, who are overseers. And he was like, okay, I have to do what you say.
It's just baffling because it's a Western setting, right?
Yeah, it's Jim. And everyone else has, well, I guess her name's Amira. That's a Japanese name. So.
Aguera?
No, Mira. The hot girl is Mira. Mira's a Japanese name.
I thought it was like Miriam, you know?
Yeah, but isn't Mira like Mirai is like light or something? Or I don't remember. I don't know. I've seen other manga and anime girls named Mira before, so it strikes me as Japanese.
I feel for me that's like a old timey English name, but I guess it could work both
could
ways.
Could be both. Yeah.
So, yeah, essentially he fires his gun backwards and hits the same spot she does because he got flustered by being near a woman. When he fires backwards, he follows the trajectory of her bullet so perfectly that they both hit the same spot in the wall.
Yeah.
And that it actually doesn't make sense.
No.
Not the physics of it all. I can like go along with the...
It's fantasy physics.
But did he actually accidentally shoot backwards, or did he do this intentionally?
No, this is intentional. I think 100% it's intentional.
Okay, just to seem like an idiot or an oaf in front of his classmates.
I think you see... right here, like, she notices Mira when they're done. He's just like, he's fast, this man. Like, I think basically in the time that she starts to draw, he's like already drawn, seeing that he's beat her, and then he's like, oh, I don't want to beat her, I want to be careful. And then he flips his gun around and does the fire in the wake thing. Like, basically in the time that it takes her to draw her gun and shoot once, he's like made all these calculations, drawn, flipped his gun around, and then follows her bullet. Like, he's done all that, you know, in essentially a nanosecond, like the amount of time it would take a gun to do that. But like, that's his skill, right? That's like the cool fantasy, like, I'm just that good. So
I like that then, because this is some Harry Dubois Disco Elysium slippery bullshit where he appears as an incompetent oaf like 99% of the time, so everyone drops their guard, but he's like incredibly perceptive, so he remembers everything they said when they drop their guard. So I like that. Okay.
Yeah. So class starts.
And they go into, let me describe the super magnum.
It's so funny.
So basically the cop teacher at the cop school, they talk about how desperados and marshals have always fought. And then there was the king of marshals who wielded a super magnum, a gun capable of leveling a whole continent. And they have the super magnum locked away in... underneath the school, under layers of steel. I think the school is literally built on top of it, the top part is a school, the rest of it is a super magnum. No one's able to fire it and live. Presumably the king of the marshals fired it and died, based on that story. And the main character is here so he can claim the king's magnum, and I don't know why, but I guess fire it.
I think because like I mentioned in the last discussion, a character needs something that they want, and he wants this, and that's
and that works.
Like, that's fine.
I'm fine with that. Like, honestly, look at Black Clover. It is far more generic than this. The start of it. I mean, they want to be Wizard King for.
Yeah, I mean, they literally they stole One Piece, but yeah.
This also stole One Piece.
Oh, there's a little bit of stuff, yeah, but.
Yeah, but I feel like if you're going to be the king of anything, it's like, and you're, I don't know, it all feels like One Piece, you know? But yeah, this reminded me kind of the gun devil leveling a continent with a gun.
Yeah. Well, and also, yeah. Also, so it like shows the handle here, and then is this like, is it encased
one
or
of the super magnums? I think
this is Excalibur. I think, right?
This one's Excalibur. Yeah.
Yeah. But is this, is the stuff we see coming off it, what's locking it down, or is that actually the like end of the gun?
It's locking it down, I believe, because they said they buried it under the, they sealed it off in the institution with 400,000 steel frame. Okay. Yeah. So it's just like a gun that's like locked down, like it's an eldritch entity.
Yeah. Cause I thought it would be cooler if this was like Akira iced, where it's like, this is the handle and you pull it and it's the whole thing is the gun and it like fires, like it just causes an explosion or something. Like that would be cool. I think you're right. I think it is just locked down.
I would prefer if it was like a gigantic gun too, right? Like it's like a small handle for this 400,000 ton gun.
Yeah.
It is
interesting design wise that these guns have katana handles because why not?
That's just badass. That's just badass like the shit.
The teacher here also has a katana handle gun. So I don't. Does Jim? I think Jim has two guns, right?
Have you played Metal Gear Rising?
A little bit. Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
A Jetstream Sam has a katana that like the what's the sheath has a firing mechanism. It fires the katana out of the sheath,
yes,
and he grabs it for a quick draw. Yeah, and that's like the kind of shit it reminds me of. It's cool.
As a personal anecdote, I think anytime you combine guns and blades, it's cool. Like I think Ruby is one of the lamest series ever, but like Ruby's like sniper scythe is awesome, and I think Final Fantasy VIII is cool.
Squall.
Yeah, Squall is cool. I think, there's other gun.
Let's not go too far.
Yeah, Squall, I love it. I think it's cool.
Squall is not cool, but his gun blade is very cool.
His gun is cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get Jim here saying, I'm going to claim it fair and square in a way that everyone will acknowledge. That's why I enrolled. I'm going to have them recognize my skills in no time. This is why I like Agera, and I think she's my favorite character so far. She's just like head buried in advanced gunsmithing, and her like the goggles on her. Yeah, the goggles are like a second pair of eyes.
Aren't
actually, but they're her character design. Like
was like you know how Saitama has like the boobs shirt. Yeah. That's what her goggles remind me of. Like,
oh, yeah,
his little boobs shirt.
Yeah, it's also I also like the comedy of it is good. Boichi, for all his writing issues, I think is pretty funny. Has some good comedy. So he's like, "This Aigera Dutch will cover them all," and it's like, "He's asleep already. He's not the studying type." And he's like, "Aigera eyes front and center."
So I read this Reddit comment that's like, "Why does everyone have to make such a goofy main character?" And I'm like,
"It's fun."
I just don't agree with that at all. Like, make more characters goofy.
Yeah,
I think I am more of a goofy character lover than I am an edgy character lover.
I'm trying to think of the last like serious, like in an action battle shonen. Also, for sure, I don't want a hyper serious main character. Like, I try to think of the last good hyper serious main character in a battle shonen. I don't know. Like,
is Kagurabashi from Kagurabashi?
Kagurabashi's pretty, yeah, but he's. I don't want to say that the main character in Kagurabachi is not a compelling character. He's not a complex character, I will say. He's pretty simple and straightforward. He's the straight man to everyone else's wildness, is what I'll say, which works.
Listen,
but
bro,
less interesting.
Yeah, I get you. It's like some people love Dante and some people love Virgil, and it depends on the camp you're in, right?
Yeah, for sure. But that's it for Marshall King. Anything else?
What did you think overall?
I think it's an easy read. I think I will keep reading it. And as long as it doesn't get too, if it gets too predictably generic and any less fun, I don't know. It just seems like an easy read, like an easy, fun, simple, straightforward, like a great art. Like, I don't know. It seems like a page turner, like an easy page turner. It might be the greatest 7.2 ever.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I actually had a blast reading it. I thought people were overly harsh. But I think maybe I'm also being skewed by being a hipster and being brainwashed by Boichi's art. either way, I had a great time with this.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
I think you definitely cannot understate the importance of the art in a manga. Like, if your art looks good, if your story is bad, it's still more readable. Like,
yeah,
if you have an awful story and amazingly perfect art, it's easier to read that than something with like mediocre art and a mediocre story, in my opinion. So.
Cool. I completely agree.
All right. Big spoiler call. This is chapter 170 of Ranger Reject. If you are not caught up, the discussion we are going to have is going to spoil a lot. So click through until you see us not looking at Ranger pages. Let's do it. Ranger Reject 170. This is called, oh God, this is like age 10 flashback 3 or something like that.
Yeah. So how do you want to do this? Do you want to kind of talk about how we got here?
Yeah, quick? definitely do a little bit of a catch up of how we got here. This chapter also has some interesting stuff in it, but yeah, D gets sent to another dream world where the goal is to make money to escape. That ends up with him teaming up with a person who we're all led to assume is Yellow Ranger, whose name is eluding me right now.
Is Kiritani.
Kiritani, yeah. But he seems like a kind of like a nicer version of Yellow Ranger. But it clearly is like that's Yellow Ranger. Like it's the same guy. They kind of get into some hijinks for two or three chapters. And then what is it? D gets like teleported into a room with a TV screen, which then like is showing him this flashback of Yellow Ranger, like going through.
Yeah.
We see him.
One quick thing to note, though.
Yeah.
Because I think this will come back around, is in that dream world, basically you achieve the win condition and go back to the real world if you make $5 million or 5 million fantasy bucks in that one.
Yeah.
And basically they make 10 million. Yellow Ranger doesn't want to go back. He wants to live in that world. But D and D's rival, I forget his name.
I don't want know. To He's go back. One of the red cadets yeah, recruits.
One of the red cadets from the early game of the series.
I think he's red. Yeah.
He's red. Yeah, one of the reds. But either way, the red guy gets sent back, and the Yellow Ranger of that world, who doesn't want to go back, was holding the briefcase, so he passes too. But D is like kind of, you know, like caught up and doesn't get passed. And he gets in trouble. And they put him in this room where he sees kind of Yellow's memories.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of the flashback we're in.
Yeah.
D and us, the audience, are seeing Yellow's flashback.
Yeah. And then in these flashbacks, let me actually see, because the names of them, the names of the chapters here I thought were really cool. So I want to go grab those. So we get, when we start the flashbacks, we get, the chapter's called Shinya Kiritani, age 28. That is 5 parts. And then after that, we get Shinya Kiritani, age 10. And that we're on part 3 of that. So.
I didn't read the chapter names. That's cool.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting because. So basically, how short can we make the Shinya Kiritani, age 28? What basically we learn is that he is a writer. He's been put on this new project, you know, which is. Dragon Rangers or whatever, or he's I think maybe the original he's like the original writer of it from what I understand. Yeah. Because the idea
of the
idea of the Dragon Rangers, as we learn, it comes from he is dating or engaged. I think they're just dating at the start.
Engaged.
Okay. He's engaged to a girl. His fiance is one of the 5 dragon priestesses. Like IRL, we basically learned that like it's real, like which we kind of know obviously from the rest of the story. Yeah. But this is kind of a revolution to him. And that happens when some drama happens internally, basically in that they hire a second writer who we know about, who's the glasses girl, whose name is also eluding me, who died.
Bruce, would you mind if I gave a quick recap? Because I actually wrote one up.
Dude, if you wrote one, hell yeah, go for it. Yeah. You're better. I did not, so.
Or I wrote notes on the recap.
Yeah, do it.
But basically, what happens is that Kiritani is just a writer. He's writing for a new Sentai series, the Dragon Ranger series, that's his baby. He created it. As soon as he has started up his project, he is introduced to like a award-winning rookie writer who is also brought on. And she instantly has feedback to give him. And he wants to be like a receptive mentor. So he's like, yeah, okay, I'll take the feedback. And he changes some parts. And the parts he changes are met with like, oh, wow, that's a great change. And the resentment is slowly boiling up within him.
He starts getting overshadowed by her like very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very quickly. And also he is not flexible in his creative vision. It's ego, right?
Yeah, for sure, ego.
At a point, the Yellow Ranger, they cast the Red Ranger, who he sees on a train beating up this dude, but for touching a woman on the train.
Yeah.
And he thinks to himself, wow, that guy is volatile, but at least he's trying, right? They see Red Ranger again for the audition for the Red Ranger part. They instantly take him in. The guy who's supposed to play the Yellow Ranger just mysteriously disappears. They all think he like ran away from home or whatever. This is like exec's son, who's going to get the job.
He was like a Nepo cast. Like they didn't necessarily want to cast him, but it's like, oh, he's the son. Yeah. He's like the son of the exec and you kind of have to cast him. They're like, all right, whatever.
Exactly. Nepo baby casting. And, then Kiritani, they ask him to play Yellow Ranger in the interim because they need to film. And he does for the first episode. And then they still can't find the guy. So they're like, let's just keep him, Kiritani, as the Yellow Ranger. So for the first like 5 or 6 episodes, he is the Yellow Ranger. His co-writer says, the rookie says, I don't think it's a good idea for you to keep playing this part because I looked at the script for episode 6, which is like a big moment, and it's not ready. And they should have you focusing on writing, not acting. And he's like, well, we're hitting deadlines, so we have to do both. And not everything can be 100% good.
Yeah.
We have to meet deadlines ultimately. And she's like, okay.
So a minor note, he's kind of really torn up and sad about that. Like he knows that he's basically like betraying his baby by trying to do both. And he doesn't like it. He doesn't like that he has to say that to her, but his ego kind of gets in the way of the like, oh, we have to do it.
It's both that he hates like having to do that compromise, like you said, but also he likes the attention of being the Yellow Ranger and being a part of his own project.
Yeah.
So he wants his cake and eats it and like wants to eat it too. Whatever the saying is. Wants to have his cake and eat it too. But anyway, as we continue, like the show is released, the first 6 episodes, and it's kind of an audience dud.
Yeah.
Despite him thinking very highly of the show and thinking like this is the best thing he's done. Like critical reception, audience reception is like, this is not that good. But he has since like stopped being an active writer in the role, the rookie writer, because he's acting. And the rookie writer takes over his baby. And episode 7 onwards is getting huge critical success. Like everyone's like, yeah, that rips. This writer's really killing it. And he's like kind of like losing it more and more because his thing is more successful than ever, right? It's like going up in success, but it's not his anymore. His contributions are just in the acting role, not in the creation. So despite its success, it's feeling less like his win. It's like a dual feeling over there. He's feeling inferior. So his wife, his fiance says, I have to show you something. And she takes him to a mountain and shows him like in the secret path, like the temple of the dragon priestess. And she's like, me and my sisters are all dragon priestesses. That story about the divine dragon I told you, it was you were kind of in writer's block, so it kind of just gave you a part of my life there. And he's like, I wonder if I can get sued for copyright.
Yeah.
It's a funny joke, but I think it's also telling of his ego and selfish parts, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
That's the first thing he's telling, like thinking about when his wife is like telling him she's a super secret world saving priestess. Right. Anyway,
we also see it's a cool scene when they do that, because we see the what happens when they show up. He and Yellow Ranger. We see the priestesses attack them, and the attacks that they use are things we have seen the Rangers manifest in the past. Like the
very true,
the sort of the lightning crosses, the bubbles that do stuff. That was what Blue Ranger used a long time ago. So, and
Exactly.
And his wife uses this like shield thing, which we, I don't think we've seen that yet, because we'll kind of talk about, but that gets passed to their child eventually. So.
Right. And exactly. So, essentially Kiritani, is kind of hands off the show. He's just an actor now. The show is doing well, but ended up being a dud. After they found out that Yellow Ranger has been murdered and like found in the woods. Kiritani finds out, like puts it together that it's the Red Ranger. He finds evidence, but he also suspects. He confronts a Red Ranger guy about it. And Red Ranger's like, I understand if you want to like report me. I had to do it because he wasn't committed to the part.
Yeah.
And Kiritani was like, nah, you did a good job, man. Good stuff. And then later, like right after he says that, he goes and calls the cops and reports him.
Yeah. Which we see later on is sort of like a psychotic break in that he like did it and doesn't remember it. And there's kind of two sides of him, which will come up in a bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, like after that, the show ends because of the big scandal. And he goes and works on the farm with the priestesses and is just living a peaceful life. And he appreciates the peaceful life. He loves the priestesses and like his fiance. But he is also like the second part of him that loves his art is like going crazy inside.
Yeah.
And it all comes to a head when his wife, he and him try to have a kid. They have a son, and dragon priestesses, the boys always die early. The boy died, and they essentially try to bring him back to life with the cloning tubes that we saw.
Yeah. Like they use the dragon priestess magic to develop technology around it, which kind of like is an immediate connection to like that's how the Rangers exist, is this like technological utilization of the dragon powers, the dragon priestess powers. So
essentially, instead of like resurrecting their dead son, it's more so an excuse for Kiritani to obsessively pursue his craft, his baby, his real love, the art. He makes two clones of himself. One clone, a little on the nose, dressed in white, is the part that values and cherishes his family and his peaceful life. And the other part is the one that values and cherishes his art obsessively.
Yeah.
And after that, he says, well, there's no need for the failure anymore, and slits his own throat.
Yeah. This is wild. Like reading this two or three weeks ago when it happened, I was like, what the actual fuck? But it's interesting because it's kind of hard to express in a recap, but like Kiritani this whole time in these flashback chapters, he knows that he has both of these things that he loves and is kind of obsessed over, his family and his art and the show. And his big thing is like, he does not know which one to choose to go after with his whole heart. He literally can't figure it out. And this is his way of figuring it out. It's like, well, I'll just do both. And like kills himself.
Yeah, I'll just do both. Exactly.
Yep. I'll let my clothes do both and I'm off.
The worst decision. Yeah. Anyway, he kills himself. He made both the clones age up to 10 years old, by the way.
Yeah.
So they have like the brain to understand his intent. Anyway, as soon as he kills himself, the clone dressed in black essentially bullies the shit out of the clone dressed in white, the empathetic one.
It tries to kill him.
It not even tries to kill him. It kind of just beats the shit out of him, knocks him unconscious, and then goes up and kills every single dragon priestess, including his fiance.
I think it's his wife is at that point, probably, but yeah.
His wife at that point. Yeah, and except for the little girl priestess.
Yes, kill. Her name is Muko at this point. So we learn about her earlier. We learn that there's like, there's a younger dragon priestess. The others are all, you know, like in their 20s or 30s. And then there's a young dragon priestess who I think is like four or five the first time we meet her, named Muko. And at some point, one of the dragon priestesses says something about how like there's only ever supposed to be five dragon priestesses. And if there's ever another one, it's like bad luck. And so
it's like a harbinger of destruction.
So there's this tie together of they let this Muko girl live and raised her. And instead of like offing her and having only five dragon priestesses, right? The four who were there and then the wife, they have six. And so that, I think it's cool that kind of leads to their downfall with, it's one of those like, how you say it? like hypothetical connection of like the dragon powers are real. They might have said like, hey, you got one too many. Here's a crazy man from Hollywood who's going to fuck your shit up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the sixth one existing opens itself up to some interesting thoughts, but
six rangers.
Yeah, maybe like, we see that White has taken Muko. The clone dressed in white has taken Muko and is living a peaceful life, kind of just trying to do right by her.
Yeah, they're just like fishing on the beach and living in a hut.
He changes her name
at this point to Yumeko, who is the girl we meet in chapter one, who is the, I think she's part of Yellow Battalion, isn't she? That would make sense.
Yeah, she's the crazy one, the last dragon.
She's the crazy one who wants to take down the, she's like very on board with taking down the Rangers in chapter one, and we've seen her a bunch, so yeah.
And it also makes sense why Yellow lets her get away with so much and keeps her so close.
Yeah, for sure.
In retrospect. But anyway, basically the clone dressed in white takes finds a corrupted fish and decides to take the boat out to go investigate. Muko goes with him, and they get attacked and they wash up on shore. They swim over to shore and they find the secret island laboratory.
That's where we are in this chapter. So
yeah, the weird looking invader guy comes up and it's like, oh, hey, boss man, experiment's going good. And he shows him around the laboratory thinking he's the clown dressed in black. Because they look alike.
There's some important kind of exposition lines here. So this place is his base, his being the black Kiritani, the bad Kiritani. And the project to create invaders with the powers of the divine dragon stolen from the Suzukiri clan has already come this far. So the passion based one, I guess you would say, is basically like, I'm going to exploit the dragon priestess's powers, the dragon powers to create, like, he's like furthering. Tell me if you agree with this. In my opinion, this is a furthering of the cloning technology they use to create the Kiritani twins to try to clone a divine dragon is basically right. That's kind of the lead on to get to there.
Yeah, I think what they're doing is they're using Red as kind of a test subject clone to create like a human infused with divine dragon powers.
Yeah.
A human that otherwise didn't have it. So one, not like a priestess who was born with it, but like just a
The priestesses are like, they commune and channel the powers of the divine dragons. And I think they're trying to recreate that in a more like direct way, like a more direct connection or something like that. Yeah. Like he says right here, like creating a human divine dragon, like as opposed to
exactly. In this chapter, you see like one of the clones of Red created and he looks terrified upon his like birth. Deemed a failure and automatically disintegrated.
Yeah. We get a cool, it says DR-738. They like do this test. They inject him with something. It's like he has invaderified is the word they use, which is interesting to say. That
not basic, the most scientific term.
No. And it's probably a weird translation thing, but,
I like it though. It's funny.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, it is a good thing. What was I going to say? Well, I know that on the next page we have a great line about, or did I grab it? Oh no, it's this one, right? So there's basically, I don't even know how to connect it yet, or if there's more information here, because it's like trying to connect someone with the divine dragon power, but it fails, creates an invader or an executive. And if it succeeds, you get like a ranger, but a ranger is really only channeling through technology. So I don't, the real channelers are the dragon priestesses, right? So.
I think they Red is also a real like successful version of this because
before the dream world and the flashbacks, Red is like using real power. The Red clone who did all that stuff in the slums 100 2 years ago is channeling real power. So he has some kind of divine dragon connection, I think. So yeah, I think you're right that they do figure this out eventually in some way.
But I think aside from Red, none of the other Rangers have like aren't like hybrids like Red is.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's true. They're also not clones. Because yeah, we know that we know that Pink dies, they don't replace it with a clone of Pink. They get someone else. But Red is the one that they keep replacing with a clone. So
yeah. The figurehead makes sense. Yeah, and here you see like one of the successful iterations of the executives that only existed in his brain before, but now brought to reality. And then we get to see, I think this is our Red, our failed clone Red. Oh, no, not this one. This one is the one that wakes up, is horrified, and gets disintegrated. Well,
this is the one that there's an interesting line here. They call him Reject, which is like, oh, it's a name drop. It's classic. I guarantee you the official release will use some other word because the Reject isn't a part of its title. I just like this. And
it's like XX, right? Like it's like the foot soldier XX.
Yeah. Well, you want to hear my crackpot theory? I think this is probably a good time to drop it. I think D is one of these failed clones. I think.
Oh, totally.
Like I think he actually might literally, because we see it on screen here, I think DR-740 might literally be D. Like I think that they're showing us this to show us D.
Yeah, I actually thought this was maybe XX, you know, like because
it could
we
be
see
yeah.
the two X's.
It could be.
That's her name, XX, right?
Yeah, that's the name of the girl invader that we meet long time ago. But yeah, she's been around.
Yeah, I think D is definitely one of them. I think this one, just because we see the visual XX on screen, might be just XX.
Yeah, maybe. My thought was that because in the very next test, right, in DR-741, they successfully clone Red Ranger with the power. My thought is that the reason D is so different is that he's extremely close to being a successful clone, but he's not a successful clone, right? That's why he does. There's a couple of things that he does in the story that are sort of like, I didn't think invaders could do that, or invaders shouldn't be able to, you know, use the divine dragon, stuff like that. So I think,
I think D is a terrible clone, like for their intent.
Well, yeah, yeah.
He's like way too empathetic. He doesn't follow orders at all. Right. Like I think D is very much one that they would deem a complete failure even now. But just because they are very much after a powerhouse unit that follows orders.
Well, I guess in the sense that they are trying to create a clone with the power of the divine dragons, if they call 741 a success, 740 is their closest to making that. Where I agree with you, the other, he's rebellious, he doesn't fit the mold, blah blah blah. I will also say that D's human form, let me pull up a picture of it. D's human form,
so Sakurama,
yeah, looks a little bit not Sakurama, this version.
Looks
a little bit like a Red Ranger with longer hair, like kind of looks a little bit like it.
Yeah,
so.
I totally think you're on the money, is that D is just one of the copies of Red Ranger that failed.
I think so. Either one of the copies or like a conglomerate of a bunch of them, right? Because we learned.
But I also don't think he has any divine dragon power.
I don't know.
He's just a
failure. I don't know. That's yet to be seen. I think he might, but we'll see. He might not.
I hope he doesn't. I appreciate that he is completely powerless even until this point in the story.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it makes him being a failure succeeding better.
Yeah, for sure.
This one is, they deem it a failure, but this was their successful attempt of infusing the dragon powers into a person. Mm. And I think this is our Red Ranger, the crazy one.
I think this is this is the one that I think we see wake up in the slums and do all that stuff. Yeah, I think so.
And I think they erroneously deem it a failure because, truly, Red Ranger is insane. He is a murderer.
I think that is a perfect clone.
Yeah, this is what they are going for. This was a success, even though the guy said this guy's a total failure.
Yeah.
He just didn't understand that this is what Red Ranger is like.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And there just wasn't the like different social pressures or raising or whatever of him to want to not kill people, because he clearly is just like that.
He's just a psycho.
He
kills everyone in that lab, and the clone dressed in white takes Muko and runs out.
Yep. And that's basically the end. So wild shit happening in Ranger Reject for the past 4 months, 3 months, So cool, though. I love the series.
Yeah, very cool. I suppose the only thing is, how do people not talk about how this was a TV show at one point? I like the little kids. I remember, like, in the previous chapters, we were all speculating, right? Yeah. It's like the little kids, like, asked their parents, like, wasn't something like, wasn't this a TV show that you watched as a kid, Dad? Dad's like, oh, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's still some mystery around the TV show. I mean, the big kind of finale mystery about the 28th episode script or whatever, 26th, whatever that, like, the final script thing that the glasses writer girl wrote. Because I think that what's happening here is that Bad Kiritani, like, the reason that Bad Kiritani, like here, right? Like, there's a failure, or I don't know if this is a failure or if this is just a display of it, but Bad Kiritani is making all the pieces to recreate the television show, right?
Right.
And so part of that is he makes the executives. Part of that is he makes the invaders. And the other part is he's trying to make the Rangers, and the Rangers are humans infused with the power of the Divine Dragons. Like that, because in the show, that's what they are, right? In reality, right, what they tell the public is that the Rangers are infused with the power of the Divine Dragon. But in reality, it's technology harnessing that, right? It's the little guns, the little swords and stuff that they make. So none of the Rangers can actually harness the Divine Dragon, except, of course, this Red. So I don't know why people don't talk about it, but something about Bad Kiritani wanting to recreate exactly what is happening. Bad Kiritani is Yellow Ranger, his current Yellow Ranger, right? So
yeah, current Yellow Ranger. And the good Kiritani is the guy we saw in
Trapped in the Dream,
in the dream world, who just got freed.
Yep. So that's why he's after the script, right? Is that Bad Kiritani's goal through all of this, I think, is basically to recreate perfectly his art IRL in real life. And he needs that script to know how everything ends. That's why he's so interested in knowing, in getting that script. And because that's his art, quote unquote, that he wants to execute on. So when he has that script, he'll follow through on it, whatever it is or whatever it means. So that's kind of the big mystery.
And the bad one cares about nothing but the ultimate product, which is entertaining television.
Yes, which is a side effect is televising the real Rangers that exist now and creating the real Rangers as like as a real product, which is also televised, but like it's real, like they're the Rangers are real. So yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a story where his show failed so bad that he made the show in real life, and
and they like it now, don't they?
Detriment. Yeah. His Joker arc.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think the other Rangers are just normal humans that aren't in the know outside of Red, because they couldn't even get Red right in his eyes, right? Like, they couldn't even get the Red clone behaving properly. What chance do they have to get 5 different Ranger clones all behaving how they want them to if they can't get one dude? So I think they instead of infusing like 4 different clones for each Ranger with Divine Dragon stuff and going through the testing, they just put it in the tools and hired out and had Red as a figurehead that they can control.
Yeah. I think in general, they've hired people who they thought were going to be easy to control or have some way to have sway over them. Like, if you think about,
Every single one, it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Except for now, Green being a wild card, I will say. But if you think about Pink, right? Like, Pink is was crippled by invaders, had a brother who they had leverage over. Basically, like, the only way she could use her legs and walk was the power of the Divine Dragons being a Ranger. So, and Blue was just this like hyper justice filled guy, the first Blue, right, that died. So they control him by having
the first Blue also had like bills to pay. Like, he was in organized crime to keep an orphanage open.
That's right. I forgot about all that, but yeah, for sure.
And they bailed him out of that life in like, so they like forgave his crimes and they promised that they would keep the orphanage open in exchange for his services, Blue Rangers. So they all had like kind of a shackle of, I need to work here, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely Yellow pulling the strings at like virtually all times. For like the majority of the stuff. This is the moment now where I'm in the mindset and the mood of like, now you start to read through. Like, if you're like need to look for more hints and stuff, like, where is this true? Where is Yellow pulling the strings? Like, how does this all tie together with Yumiko and all this stuff? It's like, now would be a good time to, or maybe as soon as the flashback is over. I don't know how many more chapters we've got, but
yeah. I think we learn a lot from the Invaders Rights Association arc.
Yes,
we're with the old Ranger stuff. I think a reread would help us remember, because like the super mega Death Invader guy, the boss of the association, really loved the old show, not the new show.
Yeah.
Well, but he loved D. He loved D a lot. So I'm curious as to like how, like on a reread, if we'll find parts that really make sense as to why he had the resentment to the new show.
I think a lot of it is going to basically tie back to Yellow Ranger was behind it, because I think in that specific example, like, well, how did the Invader Rights Association get the technology to transform a guy into something from the original show? And it's like, that's probably Yellow did that, right? Like, probably Yellow had a hand in that. And
presumably,
we might even have been hinted at, and we don't remember it because it's, you know, a panel or two, a hint or two. But that would be my guess, is that anytime you look at how did they have this, or if they reference something from the old show, it's probably Yellow doing his, I have to recreate this perfectly, or recreate a new, you know, perfect entertainment product thing. So.
Right. Yeah. Just like he is thinking of it in arcs as well, you know?
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like the audience is.
Which is interesting with the kind of chase down D arc, which we just had, where was like,
I think D is just pissing him off by being like he feels like D is an extra.
He's an undirectable actor. He is like literally D is the undirectable actor who is not was literally going to mess up his show. So yeah,
too much influence over the plot. He's just a random invader. Yeah.
You are not supposed to be the lead character, and yet you are.
I love it.
It's great. This is why
I hope D doesn't have any like dragon powers, because I really love him kind of solving shit just through wiliness, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would guess that if D has dragon powers, all the invaders have them in some small amount. It isn't like he's special. Like, I think that because they all were an attempt at that, right? So in the kind of the same way that
that comes back around with the Invader Corps, the foot soldier corps, where they're all one like person type of thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's so many little details that I'd have to go and refresh myself on. Like, because I thought that at some point that they compared the executive's power to being like, oh, the executive's power are also from the same place the Ranger's power is from, which makes sense now with knowing this.
They're both dragon powers.
Yeah. They're both essentially dragon powers. So yeah.
But
I don't know.
Okay. One thing to note theory wise is, you know how all the foot soldiers are one, right? They all have that one core in the Flying Fortress. As they mentioned earlier, the super mega Death Invader told D. In that case, Red probably shares the same core as D.
Potentially, yeah. That's definitely possible.
Yeah.
If we're talking about clones sharing the core, it's also possible that Yellow Ranger and Good Kiratani might also have that core.
True. True.
That to be true. So, yeah. So destroying that core, that might be, hey, prediction for the finale. They might figure this out, and destroying the core will destroy Yellow Keeper, who's fucking everything up, and the Red Clone, who's extremely powerful and connected to Divine Dragons. But that also means that D is sacrificing himself. That might be the thing that happens.
I don't think that happens, because I think the whole theme is coexistence.
Yeah.
And I think D has learned like a lot, and he said he'd be back to save his other foot soldier friends. So I think ultimately they don't break the core, but they find a way to kind of unified by the end of all of this.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. There's still lots of ways this could go. And it has surprised me at basically every turn. So it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Again, criminally underrated series.
So underrated. We're getting a season two. I really hope that people, when they watch the anime season two, they're like, wait a minute, this is really good now. Because it is.
I know.
Cool.
I hope so too.
Anything else on Ranger then?
No, I had a blast reading it, though.
Yeah, it's so good. I had told you when you're catching up, I was like, it's the craziest shit these past couple of months.
Did you see the panel I posted of D trying to get a job?
Yeah, I think I did. I'll go refresh myself.
It's just like, relatable. Like,
I have no interest in this company other than money. Let me, where's open? Yeah, this panel.
Yeah, this is like him in an interview.
Yeah.
There's no human alive who wants to work for any reason other than money. So true, D.
It's good. Like,
you're fucking right, brother.
I just like attach this anytime you're applying to a job, just like put this picture in the cover letter. I have no interest in this company other than money. There's no human alive who wants to work for any reason other than money. If I get hired, I'll make sure to make you lots of money too.
I love that.
Good stuff. Cool. I checked for news this week and there's basically nothing. So not much to cover there. Gautam, tell me, let's go to one more thing and then get out of here. What else have you been doing this past week?
I'm almost done with Prey 2017. I actually adore this game. It's very good. It is, it's mostly a spaceship exploring simulator with some horror elements, where mimics hide is objects in the spaceship you're exploring. And, basically everything has gone to hell in the spaceship. You're kind of figuring out what happened and trying to deal with the situation. It's on Game Pass. If you're looking for a good survival horror action game, this is, and you haven't played this one, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
Try it out.
Lots of people really like Prey. It's a really inventive, immersive sim style type game almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Akin to Deus Ex kind of a thing.
Yeah. Similar. Cool. I am also advertising Game Pass. I'm playing Avowed, which I did have to pay like $22 to play a little bit early, but I think it's really good. It's like a really distilled, focused version of Skyrim with like way better combat, as opposed to having to run across a giant continent. Like all of the secret caves and islands and stuff you can get to are like really close together, and so you just kind of pop from one to the next. So I've played for like 4.5 hours. I've kind of explored most all of the first, like half of the first little area. And I have like 10 or 12 unique items, like special items and stuff. And it's really good. I like it.
Well,
it works for me.
What kind of build are you doing?
I was going to try to do guns, and guns are okay. I have not found a good, like a unique gun yet. The magic of the game is also pretty interesting and I like it. So, maybe do magic and guns, although that's kind of, I don't know. It's really easy to respec, so I might try out a bunch of different stuff. You also level kind of slowly. I get to go about one level an hour, I would say. So I'm at like 4.5 hours. I think I'm at level 4. So I'll have to play some more. Again, still really early, but like I said, it's a distilled version of Skyrim with very kind of focused and small world with good exploration. Like really, you aren't picking up every single fish and apple and thing that you see, but you do get to pick up everything, okay, but it's not too much. I think it's just a really good distilled version.
Nice.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
And the combat is fun.
And the combat is actually fun, yes. It is.
Oh,
like,
good to hear. Okay.
It is like different and better and hard. Like if there's more than two enemies, like I'm taking damage and munching like meals and taking potions. Like it's tough.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I dig that.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. But I think that's it. Unless you got anything else, Gautam?
Nope, that's it for me too.
Cool. Hey, thank you again for listening or watching, everyone. Don't forget to leave us some feedback, comment, upvote, thumbs up, all that jazz. Check out Twitter and Patreon, linked in the description. And thank you for being with us yet again this week.
Goodbye.
And don't forget to read more manga.